America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day it is. It is Super Tuesday. Or as some skeptics from abroad have said in the Financial Times over in London, it's really Stupor Tuesday. It is the beginning of the end of much meaningful doubt of about what's going to happen in the presidential nomination contests. Nobody expects that anyone will beat Joe Biden for the nomination, though there are still expectations that in the State of the Union address, which is coming up 2 days from now, Thursday night is the State of the Union address, Joe Biden may take the opportunity to step aside after he basically clinches the nomination tonight with primaries in American Samoa plus 15 other states. There's some big Senate primaries coming up, and there's a big news on a Senate race of someone who was expected to make a race but has pulled out, and that is one of the nation's three independent senators, Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, the Arizona independent elected as a Democrat. She has just announced in time for Super Tuesday that she will retire at the end of her term this year, blaming growing partisanship and mudslinging in Washington for driving her decision to not seek re-election. "I believe in my approach, but it's not what America wants right now," Sinema said in a video announcing her decision. How does she know it's not what America wants right now? Well, because she's been running third in the polls. This means that the Democrat, a somewhat moderate Democrat, former Marine named Ruben Gallego, who's a congressman from Arizona, will be running in a head-to-head confrontation with one of President Trump's favorite Republicans, Carrie Lake, former newscaster, who still claims that she won the race for governor. Which, by the way, if she doesn't drop that or move on from it, go to something else, it's going to hurt her in a race. And this is a crucial race because it's an obvious chance for Republicans to pick up a seat in the Senate. And by the way, Kyrsten Sinema has been so unpredictable in terms of what position she takes and whether she works with Republicans or Democrats. She would have taken some votes away from Carrie Lake. So this may be good news for Republicans and for Trump Republicans in particular, like Carrie Lake, that she can now step in and win her face-to-face confrontation. Nikki Haley's last stand, is that really the way that we should be describing this race? We'll talk about that with Rich Lowry, the editor of National Review, who also takes a look at some polling which makes it look just about inevitable that Donald Trump will win re-election. Now, this said before any of his many trials, any of the four trials get underway. Though one of them, the one about the hush money to porn stars, that's supposed to start happening in a matter of weeks. And we will see whether that strengthens President Trump further as his previous indictments and previous legal problems seem to have done. Meanwhile, this is the statement by Kyrsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona. She's had an interesting life she's had. She grew up partially in a trailer and in a trailer park, and her background is LDS. She is grew up as a member of the Mormon Church. I'm not sure she identifies as Mormon still. But here is Senator Sinema, who also got a lot of publicity when she was first elected to the U.S. Senate. She was the first openly bisexual member of the U.S. Senate. And Yes, I remember that her colleague in the Senate, John McCain, made a comment about her. He said they accused me of playing both sides of the aisle, but Kirsten really does that. She won't be doing that any longer, not in the U.S. Senate, not after this January when the new senator will take over. Here was Senator Sinema and her statement about not seeking re-election. Clip 16.
Despite modernizing our infrastructure, ensuring clean water, delivering good jobs and safer communities, Americans still choose to retreat farther to their partisan corners. These solutions are considered failures, either because they're too much or not nearly enough. It's all or nothing. The outcome, less important than beating the other guy. The only political victories that matter these days are symbolic. Attacking your opponents on cable news or social media. Compromise is a dirty word. We've arrived at that crossroad, and we chose anger and division. I believe in my approach, but it's not what America wants right now. I love Arizona, and I am so proud of what we've delivered. Because I choose civility, understanding, listening, working together to get stuff done, I will leave the Senate at the end of this year.
Okay, so again, she sounds more like she's setting her up for a successful run in a three-way race where she could go for the moderates, for the independents, who are caught in the middle and who like the actual idea of compromise. When she says, I believe in my approach, she actually does seem to have won, particularly in the last 3 years of her six-year term, she seems to have won the support and respect of a lot of her Senate colleagues. And the idea that maybe this Super Tuesday isn't so super after all, that's also been articulated by other Republicans who have decided not to run. Ken Buck of Colorado, very conservative, member of the Freedom Caucus, said this about his not running for re-election. This is clip 17.
There are a lot of things that went into the decision, but really we're at a time in American politics that I am not going to lie on behalf of my presidential candidate, on behalf of my party. And I'm very sad that others in my party have taken the position that as long as we get the White House, it doesn't really matter what we say.
And that is so true and courageous. What they point out in the hotline wake-up call, what to expect on Super Tuesday today, former President Trump, who has all but sealed the Republican presidential nomination, will hope to move one step closer to officially sealing it at today's nominating contest. With 15 states voting, over a third of the 2,429 total delegates are available today. Trump right now leads former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley in the delegate count 244 to 43. Haley, who may have an eye on a future run for office, I'm not sure that's true. Everybody is speculating that, but I don't think that's her point. She will be helping to collect as many congressional-level delegates as possible, as well as statewide delegates in places where the winner-take-all threshold is above 50%. 8 of the 15 states, including North Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas, allocate congressional-level delegates. So far in this primary, Haley has shown the most promise in areas with a high proportion of college-educated voters. Even by the rosiest of projections, though, Haley won't collect more than 249 delegates today. We will get back to more about Super Tuesday, what it means, where we're going, coming up on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show on Super Tuesday, why is Nikki Haley still in the race? Why is she, according to a lot of speculation and her own hints, possible to even carry on her race after President Trump wraps up the number of delegates he needs to capture the nomination? By the way, he had a very good night last night in North Dakota. They had caucuses in North Dakota, and President Trump won all of the delegates that were available in North Dakota to add to his total. He thanked Governor Doug Burgum. You may remember he was actually in, I think, the first two debates. And very popular and very effective governor of North Dakota, who pulled out of the race and endorsed Trump, like everybody else has done, except for Nikki Haley. She was speaking to Jake Tapper on CNN yesterday and explained that what she was doing was not attempting to head some kind of an anti-Trump movement. So what is the point? Here's what Nikki Haley had to say. Clip three.
Well, we've said as long as we're competitive. We have been in 10 states just in the past week. I just finished a rally here in Houston, Texas. We had well over 1,000 people show up. And these are people, this isn't an anti-Trump movement. This is a pro-America movement. This is something where they're saying they're tired of the chaos. They don't want two candidates in their 80s. They want to make sure that we go back to normal. And they want to see a D.C. that works for the people instead of government, instead of people working for government. And so we've got people who are passionate. They're excited. They want to go and get America back to where they can be proud again. And so we're going to do as much as we can. I want to be as competitive as we can. We certainly have numbers that we're hoping for, but we'll see what happens tomorrow. But until then, I continue to remind everyone in those 16 states and territories, in a general election, we're given a choice. In a primary, we make our choice. And so I hope everybody will go out and make their choice tomorrow.
And by the way, that echoed another superstar, Taylor Swift, who actually didn't endorse a candidate. Nobody has to worry about that. But she made a statement urging people to go out and find out information about what is going on in their states. What she actually had to say is Taylor Swift urged people to head to the polls on Super Tuesday. That would be today. The first polls that close are in Vermont and Virginia. They close at 4 p.m. Pacific time, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Voting in Alaska doesn't wrap up until midnight Eastern time. So it's a long day of voting. Today, March 5th, it was said Taylor Swift is the presidential primary in Tennessee and 16 other states and territories. I wanted to remind you guys to vote the people who most represent you into power. That's what she said on Instagram. If you haven't already made a plan to vote today, whether you're in Tennessee or somewhere else in the U.S., check your polling places and times at vote.org. Superstar basically had endorsed Joe Biden back in 2020. Whether she will do so again, probably won't decide the election, but obviously to the literally millions and millions of people who helped to make her Time Magazine's Person of the Year, that would have some impact. In terms of Person of the Year, Nikki Haley raising money, and raising money more effectively right now than Donald Trump. She actually has prepared an ad for Super Tuesday. And it's, I think, an effective ad, like most of her advertising has been. It sounds like this. This is clip 14A.
We will have so much winning if I get elected that you may get bored with winning.
This is a ship that has a hole in it.
We lost in 2018. We lost in 2020. We lost in 2022. And Donald Trump had his fingerprints in all of it. How many more times do we have to lose before we start to say maybe Donald Trump is the problem?
There's a reason the Democrats are salivating at the thought of Donald Trump. You're watching him
changed the Republican Party policies. What used to be small government and less spending. He put us $8 trillion in debt in just 4 years.
Didn't shrink government, he grew government.
We've always believed in peace through strength. And now we see him walking away from our allies and instead holding hands with dictators.
The European Union is a foe.
No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want.
Trump has made this entire election about him.
I alone can fix it.
When it should be about the American people. That's what we're fighting for.
81% of Americans don't think their kids are going to live as good of a life as we did.
I'm fighting for an America where our kids don't live in a country that's full of anger and hatred and division.
Like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
They're poisoning the blood of our country.
Thugs that live like vermin.
Live like vermin. And then the answer that Nikki Haley provides in her advertising campaign, it's a 14B.
Now is the time, more than ever, that we have to have a leader with moral clarity.
People want someone who's going to focus on solutions and results and give people hope in the American dream again. No drama, no vendettas, just results for the American people. Look, you have a choice. And in a primary, you make your choice.
This is the time we need to make our voices heard.
Again, I don't know how many states of the Super Tuesday states that is running in, but it's an effective ad, and it doesn't sound like her campaign is completely out of gas. There is much more on all of this, but part of what is happening is there is a sense of inevitability, not just centered around Biden and Trump getting the nomination, but inevitability about Donald Trump winning the election. And Rich Lowry writes about this over at National Review. He is the author of The Case for Nationalism. He's the editor of National Review. And is it now basically a done deal that basically Donald Trump is going to knock Joe Biden out of the White House? How is this survival? asks Rich Lowry. Of Biden's situation. And that's a rhetorical question, he says. There are ways it could be survivable, but this finding in the new Fox News poll has to be the most disturbing result from the new bout of general election polling. The amazing part is that when it comes to Biden's policies, are they hurting or helping families? 48% say they're hurting families, and only 25% say they're helping. We'll be talking with Rich Lowry coming right up on The MedVan Show. And one of the many things that I admire about Rich Lowry, who is the editor of National Review, is the ability that he has to put matters in a historic context. And he has a little piece right now just asking a question, how is this survivable? And talks about some of the disastrous polling for Joe Biden. That doesn't entirely mean that Trump is a done deal, but he points out, and it's worth noting, there's a brand new CBS poll that has Trump at 52%. Yes, 52%, which must be his best showing in any national poll ever. Remember, he only got 46% when he was running against Hillary, and he actually won the election. And Rich, when you look at these new polling numbers, other than that polling number of Trump doing so much better than he did even in the election that he won before, what else jumps out at you?
Well, the numbers on the economy are just harrowing. worrying for Biden. It's not just that his approval ratings on the economy are poor. His overall approval rating is poor as well, of course. But when you ask people whose policies have helped you and whose have hurt you, more people say Trump helped them than hurt them, you know, by healthy, 10, 20-point margins. And more people say that Biden has hurt than helped them. So just that is that for me, in isolation, that would decide an election. Now, it's not going to be in isolation. There are lots of other stuff going on. Trump has his other, vulnerabilities and, these potential trials and all the rest of it. A lot's going to happen. But if you just looked at that, you'd know who the winner was, and you think it's going to be Trump.
Well, again, Trump polling, this is a Fox News poll. They say, did Biden's policies help your family or hurt your family? And 2-1, 48% said they thought Biden's policies are hurting them. And only 25% said that they are helping. Whereas Trump, it's just about the reverse. It's really operating in his direction. What does Trump have to do to avoid blowing this election?
Yeah, great question. I mean, we've talked about this before. It's very easy. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But just talk about the economy and inflation. Talk about foreign affairs and how much more chaotic things are. Talk about the border, and he has to do this as well. Say the prosecutions are political. Just do those four things. And if he said all that, if we could be guaranteed that's all he's going to talk about from now until November, I'd be more confident that he's going to win. I kind of think he's going to win now, but I'd be more confident. But of course, that's not his nature. No one's going to control him. He's going to say whatever pops into his mind, and sometimes it'll be self-defeating and self-destructive things. That's just the pattern. That's his personality and character, and no one's going to change it. But I will say he has listened to his campaign team, small, tight-knit campaign team that I think has been quite effective, more than he has in the past. That's sort of relative, but more than he has in the past. And for his sake, you hope he listens to them even more going ahead.
What scares you most about the prospect of another 4 years of Donald Trump?
Well, I think it's going to be insane on a number of levels. One, the reaction of Democrats and the left will just be, it'll make 2017 look like a walk in the park. They're not going to consider him a legitimate president. I fear, there could be tens of thousands of protesters outside of the White House for weeks or months, people thinking that we need a color revolution to stop this guy. And then, there are going to be less constraints on Trump than there were first time around. He's obviously going to have more loyalists. He's not going to have to worry about running for re-election again. I don't think we're going to, it's a straight path to autocracy the way a lot of people do. I mean, our system's very robust. There'll be all sorts of centers of power opposed to him, but it'll be, the most insane time in American politics since the 70s or the 1850s or the 1790s. I think it'll be wild, and I wouldn't be surprised, unfortunately, if there's violence, no matter who wins.
Well, that's a grim prognosis. But when you look at the likelihood of, and you can go over all of 435 congressional seats, when the Republicans are counting on candidates like Lauren Boebert to help hold their, 2-vote majority in the House of Representatives, isn't it likely that the Senate of the United States goes over to the Republicans, to our side, and the House of Representatives goes over to the Democrats and Hakeem Jeffries?
Yeah, certainly true that the Senate playing field is tilted towards Republicans this year. It would be a surprise if they don't take it back. And the House is more precarious for all sorts of reasons. But I think if Trump wins, he probably brings the Senate, which Republicans might get regardless, and probably brings the House along with them. So I kind of expect if Trump wins, unified Republican government again.
Which is what he had. Which is what he had his first 2 years. Yeah, before the midterm elections. It seems bizarre to be thinking about midterm elections already. But, 2026.
Yeah, and then you expect it to be a total wipeout in the midterms. And then 2028, we'll be back here in 2028 saying this is the most important election of our lifetimes.
Yeah, and Trump will be coming back to serve his third term, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's not crazy to me. It seems unlikely, but I've been wrong a lot. That if Trump loses, that he'll be potentially could run in 28. Now he's going to be older. He's going to have two big losses under his belt. I mean, he'll explain the first one away by saying it was rigged, and he'll try to do the same thing this year if he loses. But if he wins, he's done in 28. But the Trump element of the party will obviously be dominant, and most of the candidates in 28, I expect, would be running in a Trump mode. Although you never know, that Trump might get discredited because terrible things happen while he's president, or he might look even more like a folk hero to the right than he does now. Who knows?
What is Trump's current number about the number of unauthorized immigrants he plans to deport when he becomes president?
Yeah, this is bold talk. I think certainly ICE is going to be more active than it is now. That's not saying much. But I think there will be an immediate Trump effect where if he wins, November, December, January will be the highest numbers we've seen at the border ever. It'll make the current crisis look small by comparison because everyone's going to try to get in before Trump is there. And then it'll just stop to a trickle for some period of time, and then you'll have to – people will figure out, unless they're new rules and a new approach, they'll figure out they can get in, and the flow will start. But initially, this is the one thing – he talks about ending the Ukraine war in 24 hours, which he's not going to do. He will end the border crisis at least for some period of time in the first 24 hours. He'll, turn it off, and the deportations are much harder. Politically, they're harder. You get sympathetic people, with sympathetic stories. And it's hard to find them and all the rest of it. So the main thing is to stop them from coming. So I think there'll be more deportations. The border will be more secure. And I think he'll figure out, again, the way he did the first time around, a way without Congress to actually get rules that make sense.
Well, he's talked about building whole new camps to hold people, and 14 million people, I believe. Isn't that the number he's been working with, 14 million people he wants to get rid of?
He might be saying that, but, the rule is, in black and white letter of the law, you're supposed to detain people until their cases are determined, and then you either release them if they get asylum, or you deport them if they don't get asylum and they don't belong here. So there's supposed to be camps. Camps, obviously, that word itself has highly negative connotations for understandable reasons, but there's supposed to be detention facilities for these folks. So I think, all this talk, it's a sign of where he wants to go directionally. But is he going to literally detain, find 14 million people and detain them in facilities?
Well, yeah. Without fully boarding the Trump train, is that sustainable?
Yeah, I think that'll be we're kind of used to not boarding the Trump train. It's constantly leaving the station and leaving us behind. But that'll be the basic approach.
Yeah.
Boy. How about you?
No, Trump's unthinkable to me. And my mistake, I voted for Evan McMullen in 2016, and I really do regret it. I should have voted for Hillary.
Yeah, I had a feeling about that guy, so I did not. I went right in.
You were smart.
Yeah.
Who did you write in?
I wrote in Tom Coburn.
Oh,
first time,
choice.
And then I wrote in Mitch McConnell a second time, and I don't know about this time.
Yeah. Well, you can write in Doug Burgum, Nikki Haley.
Yeah, yeah. Doug Burgum, our next Commerce Secretary, maybe, if Trump wins.
Yeah. What do you think WFB would make of all this? I can't imagine he'd be a Trumper.
Yeah, I have a little doubt because you never know, and he had some idiosyncratic political judgments, but I think everything on the written record would suggest he'd be somewhere where George Will is. Maybe not all the way over there, but close. Now, Bill Rusher, you know, the famous publisher, I think would definitely be a Trumper.
Yeah, or Brent Bazell. I mean, the senior Brent Bazell.
Yeah, yeah. Because Rusher's whole thing was we needed a populist party, whereas Bill was, although it had some populist tendencies, was basically anti-populist. You know, you saw it in the way he treated George Wallace, wrote about George Wallace, and not just the race stuff, but just that whole kind of form of politics that Trump is very much in that tradition.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or I was remembering WFB's campaign for mayor in 1965.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing, I think about this sometimes, it wouldn't shock me if Trump's father voted for Bill in that election, because that was the kind of outer borough conservative Democrat.
And on the Michael Medved Show, speaking with Rich Lowry, he is the author of The Case for Nationalism. He is the best-selling book, the editor of National Review. He has a recent column that says Biden knowingly and purposely blew up the border in 2021. What do you mean precisely by Joe Biden doing that on purpose? Is that the old idea that he wanted more unauthorized immigrants to come into the country and then to somehow get them citizenship so they could become Democratic voters?
Yes, I don't get into the intentions. I think the basic motive is that they think we really don't have a kind of a moral right to exclude anyone who's claiming asylum. But it's just black and white fact that he blew up every Trump policy that was working. And he had some first day orders loosening up on the border. And then within 2 weeks, I think 13 days after he's inaugurated on February 2nd, 2021, he had this sweeping executive order that reversed, I don't know, must have been 10 or 12 Trump proclamation statements, policies, but most importantly, made it the policy of the Biden administration to reverse Remain in Mexico and reverse these safe third country agreements that were key pillars that established control of the border. And no one forced him to do that. Congress wasn't pushing him to do that. There was no legal reason he had to do it. He just did it because they thought everything that Trump did was wrong on principle on the border. And, you know, everyone who knew anything about it said, don't do whatever you do. Don't do that. You know, it's going to be a disaster. And sure enough, it has been.
And what do you think about the proposed changes from Biden between now and the November election?
Well, we'll see if any border measures are revived in Congress. I'm a little skeptical of that. I wasn't a big fan of the deal, but there are things they can do, you know, unilaterally to shut down or better control the border. But he's caught in this vice between the base of the party that has really swung in a radical direction on immigration the last couple of decades, and popular sentiment, which is this is a debacle and it's got to stop. You know, he should have done something by now, and it's just shocks me that he hasn't. You know, over 3 years, it's been 3 years of an unsustainable situation that he's been sustaining. So we'll see. Maybe there'll be something he mentions in the State of the Union, but I think it's crazy, and it seems as though they've realized it crazy just to go on with the status quo the way they have.
As you know, your colleague Maureen Dowd did a column recently, very entertaining column, imagining what Joe Biden's State of the Union might sound like on Thursday night. And she concludes with the same spirit that you had in March of 1968 with Lyndon Johnson withdrawing from the race, where he says the work is too urgent, the country is in too much trouble, I've got to concentrate on being president, I don't have time to run for re-election, so here, open convention, my delegates are all released. Do you think there's any chance at all that some of the heads on the Democratic side of things could get together and do like a John Rhodes, Barry Goldwater going to Richard Nixon and saying, hey, big guy, it's time to step aside.
I don't. I think they're committed. And the key thing, I think Biden could have made this decision himself. He should have made this decision himself. He and Jill should have sat down last year and realized his state, and it's not going to get better. But they didn't. You know, once you're in this office, you know, and there's a Marine saluting you every day, when there's a helicopter take you somewhere, you don't want to give it up. And he doesn't want to give it up. And the key thing about the Goldwater analogy with the delegation from the Senate going to Nixon is that they had a hammer, right? If you don't go, you're going to be impeached and convicted, and you're just gone, right? So there's no alternative. So that's why, you know, big element, I'm sure, I haven't read up in this history recently, why Nixon said, okay, I got to go. But there's no such hammer with Biden. They could go to him now and say, you got to go, and he'd say no. And what are they going to do? Are they going to go out in the driveway and denounce him and say he's a disaster and he has to go and, you know, potentially hobble him with, you know, in a very tough race against this guy they fear and hate, Donald Trump? I don't think so. So I think there's some chance, and we shouldn't want this to happen. You know, there'll be a bad fall or some health event, 10-20% chance, I think, that would happen and keep Biden from ultimately being the candidate in November. But I don't believe there'll be a delegation going to them. I don't believe there's any deep plan or scheme to replace them.
What about, I mean, Biden's 81 years old now. He would be obviously 86 years old for the election of 2028 coming up. Can you imagine if there is a Trumpish candidate put forward, but that Joe Biden would attempt some comeback if the election is close and he loses it?
No. No. And I think, you know, I don't want to speculate, but usually losing power for someone that age is not a good thing, you know. So,
well, that did wonders for Trump.
Yeah, I guess so. So, and I just think the decline, you know, it's gonna get worse, and he's just that there's no way. And I just, you know, I hate to say this as well, cause it's so speculative. You know, if he's elected president again, it's supposed to be to January 2029. So we're supposed to believe really he's going to serve out the entirety of that term. This is the one thing, Michael, by the way, the entire country agrees on, except for maybe 25%. It's that he's too old to serve another term, and he just clearly is.
And so what about the idea that people are talking about turning Kamala loose, sending her around the country to be the traditional vice presidential attack dog while he rises above the fray in the White House basement or somewhere like that?
Yeah.
Is that a strategy?
You know, it seems as though they want to use him to attack Trump and try to get under Trump's skin. At least that's the latest reporting. And, you know, might as well try it. You know, I think Trump is going to say some wild things regardless. But the basic problem Joe Biden has, besides his own age at the moment, is that people think Trump's record is better than his. And that's, to me, that's the biggest thing. You know, how much more personally unpopular can you make Trump? You know, how much more radioactive can you make him? But if people think, all right, he was a jerk, I didn't like him, but he made my family better off, that's hard to get around. And that's why my gut says Trump's going to win in November.
And again, that's what a lot of the so-called experts are saying. I don't know if you saw this latest thing from Alan Lichtman, who's a historian who has predicted every presidential race correctly since 1984. He's one of the few people who predicted Trump would win in 2016. He says Biden this time. Have you seen the reasoning there?
Yeah, based on basic economic factors, I imagine.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's not crazy, you know. I think Biden could win. It just seems as though that the dissatisfaction with the rise in prices, that even if inflation has slacked off somewhat, things are still more expensive. It's hard to get around. And, you know, it's a while until November, but also a lot of that economic narrative seems baked in the cake to me. So, but maybe the economy continues to improve and people feel it. And it's not crazy to think that Biden can get some young people and minority voters to come home. You know, those are key constituencies he's been losing to Trump. So that's not crazy. So, you know, I think it's about a 50-50 proposition, but my gut says Trump.
And we've talked about this before. On Inauguration Day of January 20th of 2025, who's up there with President-elect or President-re-elect Donald Trump as the Vice President of the United States?
I don't know. Maybe Sarah Huckabee Sanders. But, you know, I think Tim Scott and Kristi Noem are under serious consideration. You know, a bunch of senators, you know, a long list of senators. But it's a really tricky job. You know, I think Mike Pence, until it blew up at the end, was really, you got to be adept at the outside game and kind of tiptoeing around stuff Trump says and defending indefensible things as necessary, and work the inside game, which is keeping his respect by occasionally disagreeing with him, but not alienating him by disagreeing with him too much. So it's really tough. So I hope whoever it is really an adept political operator.
Well, Katie Britt has been chosen to give the answer to the State of the Union address. And if she's outstanding answering Biden's address Thursday night, again, the new senator from Arkansas, from Alabama, is another name that people keep turning up with. One name that they have on the very front of their consciousness, Rich Lowry, the editor of National Review, the author of The Case for Nationalism, and always a pleasure to be getting your perspective, which is crucial for understanding the direction for this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Receive 50% off by becoming a MedHead member.